Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back to the second part of this incredible episode of Queer I Am, the podcast, live and unscripted. The conversation continues and we also have an audience Q&A. I hope you enjoy. So whatever you're up to, this is your time to settle down, relax and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Queer I Am. Is everyone having a nice time? Enjoying the conversation? Yay! Amazing. So we are now going to start with an audience Q&A. So again, thank you to all my guests for all their openness and the conversation. I really, really enjoyed that chat. I thought it was great. So thank you all very, very much. But does anyone have any questions they would like to ask our panel members or me? David, question? Do we have a... We don't have a hang on. Let me come with the mic.
Thank you. I mean, it's a fascinating conversation and super helpful. I think from my perspective, it's really interesting the role that, like, labels play in the conversation when it comes to empowerment and also kind of distance and setting boundaries. And I'm interested in how you see the kind of evolution of sex education and conversations about fluidity, and actually if labels are going to become more prominent for, you know, the search terms that you use on OnlyFans and to find what you're looking for, or actually if we're going to reach a place where labels become more of a barrier and we can kind of enter into a post-label place.
Post-label.
Great question. Who wants to take that?
I guess I'll answer that first. I think labels, well, for me personally, have a really important part to play. I like owning that I'm trans and gay and queer, and that feels very affirming to me. But I understand the limitations, right? Like, they're not going to fit everyone. And so I think there's nuance to be had there. And maybe, I don't know, as language evolves, there might be new labels that come up. Like, you know, the term non-binary, as far as I can remember, like 15 years ago, wasn't really much, wasn't really around much. So I think maybe as things evolve, we might have new language, and that's really exciting to be a part of. Yeah, I think my point is that there's, like, points where it's amazing and I feel very affirmed, but there's also, yeah, limits that labels can have.
Anyone else want to add to that?
I think, I don't know how this is sounds. I would like to live in a world where we don't need to be labeling everything. We can just exist, because straight people doesn't label themselves. But we are in a community. We need to be all the time labeling us. So why we cannot just be ourselves without be to put in an exactly label, you know? And I don't mean... we are not allowed, you know, it's, I think now it's needed, but it would be much freer if we just exist and we don't need to be, oh, we are this or that. No, we are just person. We are people. We need to be as well, because straight people are just straight people. And that's it. They don't explain more than self, but...
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
It's like liberation and freedom for the future, I guess. Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. It would be lovely to live in a world where we don't have to use labels. I personally find, like you, I find my labels quite affirming for me. But, you know, straight people don't label themselves, but you have never seen a straight person label themselves as quick as when they are threatened by a gay person. Because if they think, I mean... You know, if a gay man, straight man walks into a place where there are gay people and suddenly they've, you know, those old ignorant beliefs are sort of there systematically within them, they'll go, oh, I'm straight, I'm straight. And it's almost like a panic response. So I think in a way language is really, really powerful. And I think while it's lovely to want for a world where we don't have to label ourselves, I also think it's important to realise that language is quite powerful. And certainly for me. And I think that, yeah, perhaps soon we will have new language to describe things, and that would be
is
nice.
Is there a sense as well of, and I definitely feel this, owning that and feeling proud? Because I think, again, when we are younger, we're told... taught shame or taught to hide or filter who we are. So actually to say I'm an out and proud queer person, you know, or trans person or a gay person, there is something, I think there's a power in that and owning it. I completely agree with you that actually, you know, we shouldn't have to constantly come out and we shouldn't have to constantly have to affirm who we are to make other people comfortable. But actually, if there's something within ourselves that we can own who we are, and that's a sense of pride, I think there's, I agree, there's power in that as well. And I've definitely felt that as I've got older. I think that's something that I've definitely noticed the change within myself, I guess.
I think the label thing is interesting. So being gay is part of my identity. I think, is that working?
Hopefully. There we go. I think the labels thing is interesting because, you know, being gay is important to me. It's part of my identity. I am positive about other people's labels and all that kind of stuff. The bit that worries me is when other people interpret those labels and put baggage on those going forward. And not just about your sex or gender, but your relationship status. So we have a really infuriating phenomenon at work where 250,000 black women use sexual health services every year and either don't get offered a HIV test or turn one down. And that's, after gay men, the most likely group to be living with undiagnosed HIV, and really important for that to happen. And if they're not being offered a HIV test, they're not being talked to about PrEP or other affirming ways they can be charged with their sexual health. And that's often because the person on the other side of the table, the healthcare professional, is assuming stuff. Oh, you're married, and therefore you must be monogamous, and therefore you must be not at risk. And this word risk that appears so constantly. And so people ascribe stuff to the labels that for us are affirming, but for other people become barriers. And actually we need the people to see you in that moment as just a human and treat you like that happens. So, you know, as a gay man, we're least likely to be diagnosed late with HIV, because if we were to turn up and have any kind of issue where you're unwell, quite frankly, you get a HIV test really, really early. But we had an instance of a healthcare professional in Wales who died of HIV. She'd been ill for 18 months and she was only tested 2 days before she died. It was the last test that she had, was to find out that she was living with undiagnosed HIV. Had she been a gay man, she'd have been tested before. And only thing would be different about what people assume about being a gay man. And she had all of the same signs. If you take out the fact the labels people ascribe to her, she was a textbook, almost 1980s case. But because she was a woman, it just was not seen in her at all. So we've just got to, you know, affirm your labels and be proud of who you are. But then when you're thinking about other people's labels, just see them as a human with compassion, respect, yeah,
absolutely,
and love.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would like to add about the labels that, you know, when we are like young and we're in the high school and we get called from some kind of specific things. For example, for me, I was the faggot, you know? I remember being the faggot. And in Spain, it's really typical to use faggot between us, you know? But when I first met you, I remember you were very, oh, no, you cannot say that word. And it's like, well, but I've been told that I'm that, why I cannot own that word for myself, why I need to be hiding and say, oh, no, no, no. Like, I am not going to say, yes, if I'm a faggot, what? Faggot me, faggot you, and what? You know what I mean? But of course, you cannot say, I mean, there is boundaries, you know? Not everyone can say it, but if I'm allow you to say it, then you can say it. So, you know, if you feel triggered by something, own it. And if you're not, you're totally agreed to not do it, but, you know, fuck about, them.
About
fuck
respect,
them.
Isn't it?
Yeah, fuck them and own that, you know, and you don't need to be feeling guilty for that. If I'm a faggot, yes, and what are you? You're a piece of shit. You know what I mean? What are you? I can be a faggot, but I can be more successful than you, you know?
Yeah.
You're a wanker, so. You're leaving me, I can label you, so.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Own that.
Yes.
Any other questions? David.
So there's been so much that you guys have all talked about this evening that I can connect with, but particularly what Billy said about when you recognised your sexuality and you came out, and that for you was at 27, I think you said. For me, it was a lot later. I knew I was gay, but I hadn't actually come out. So to explore and experience different sexes and different sexualities was a big part of me owning my sexuality. But as I get older, I find that, you know, as you get older, you sort of disappear from everyone's gaze and you just fall into the background. And it's becoming even more difficult. Well, not difficult, but I'm having to put myself out there to find my sexualities, my sexes, the things that I desire. And it's really peculiar because when I've got to this great age that I am, I thought I would, you know, just be in my slippers and watching TV. But actually, I'm as sexually active as I was in my 20s or 30s. And that's incredible to me. To be living that experience. So I just wondered what your thoughts were on getting older and how you see your sexual desires and sex life, you know, forming over the coming years, because it's a real issue. Well, not an issue, but it's just an interesting concept.
I mean, I love that as well. I absolutely love that. I think for me, looking at the timeline of my life and the ability to name my desires up until, I want to say, 27 to 30 was pretty bloody poor. So if anything, I'm looking forward to getting older and exploring more things and knowing more about myself, because I don't know about the rest of you, but when I hit 30, I didn't know what I did want, but I knew what I didn't want. So I think you've got to sort of... I'm very grateful to be able to get older and express myself sexuality wise. I don't feel like I will be less desirable when I get older. I think, you know, as Prince says, I don't think of time that way, because it's an amazing thing that the media have managed to spin as a money making system. The thing that getting older is bad and you should buy all these things to stop that immediately or you won't be desirable anymore. And as soon as you can see through that as complete bullshit and just kind of own your own experience and not buy into the fact that, you know, you shouldn't have any wrinkles or you should be this or you should be that and you should, you know, be sexual, but don't tell us about it, you know, that sort of thing. I think, yeah, getting older and exploring sexuality is a privilege that I'm really looking forward to.
I think you get more comfortable in your own skin as you get older anyway. I'm 39 this year, but I definitely feel so much more secure in myself than I did, say, 10 years ago. And as a result, sexually freer. So hopefully that continues. Part of me thinks, I don't know, if I'm 70 or something, still wanting lots of sex, will that be a bit exhausting? But then I guess the other side of it is, well, maybe I'll have a lovely time. So who knows? It's a privilege to get to any age and still enjoy desire and enjoy a sense of fulfillment in yourself. I don't think it's ever too late for that, really, is it? You know, unless you're my parents. I should say parent now, shouldn't I? Any other questions? Oh, we've got Nick's.
So my questions are about porn. I really liked what you were saying, Harry, earlier about this idea that technically there's, like, everything is meant to be out there, right? But what I found is that it's really not. So my question is, if you had as much money as you need, it's all ethical, it's all consensual, what porn would you make?
Good question. Oh.
The question.
Let's get dirty.
I will tell you after this show. That is my full answer.
Anyone else want to answer that question? No? Okay. Next question. Thank you for the question, though.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Nick, you have a question?
So I have two questions. The first one is for the Terence Higgins. Sorry, I forgot your name.
Richard.
Richard, lovely to meet you, Richard. So basically, a few years ago, I had an experience with the NHS because when they were like really pushing PrEP, and I didn't feel like it was right for me. But I was made to feel very ashamed and guilty for not wanting to do it, to start taking PrEP. So I don't have very high risk sex or very casual relationships. So I didn't feel like I should be taking something that doesn't necessarily need to be for me. So what is like the view on that at the moment?
Well, firstly, healthcare professionals shouldn't be trying to pressure anyone into a particular way of going. I think they need to make sure the options are all available. And, you know, we have some brilliant people who are doing that. Sadly, we have more people who are not pushing it enough than we have people that are kind of pushing PrEP too much. But I think the crucial thing is about what works for you. I find it really hard to take PrEP. It makes me have a sticky tummy, quite frankly, and it has all the effects of PrEP because I don't want to have sex, so it puts me off the any risk of HIV transmission. But it doesn't really work for me, and knowing that's coming, it always feels like, well, this is not a thing I really want to do. But that's just a personal experience of it, and everyone's got to go about their lives the way that works for them, right? And it's about knowing that it's an option and having it there. And sometimes, you know, you trial different ways of using it, and some people take it every day, some people have event-based, some people will ultimately only use PEP as a post-exposure option, which I think you should try and use as sparingly as possible. But ultimately, PrEP is a drug that you're putting in you that does have impacts, and it can impact on people's liver and whatever. So it's one of the things that should be taken advisedly, but there should be no judgment in doing it and no pressure either way. But crucially, it's the best kept secret of mainly older gay men in this country. The younger you are in the community, the less likely you are to know about PrEP. And outside of the queer community, almost non-existent. I imagine more lesbians know about PrEP because of the kind of queer community element than straight women will know about it, for example. And so we've got to break that barrier and make sure everyone knows about all of their options and use them appropriately.
Is it available to
people outside the community as well? PrEP is available to everybody who broadly perceives themselves to be at risk of HIV transmission. The rules are a little bit annoyingly more stringent than that, although they're currently being rewritten, and they will say that very, very soon. So that's really important. But we know with lots of these things, changing the rules but keeping them only in the same settings doesn't amount to very much. So if you have to go to a sexual health clinic to get PrEP, that is only really optimised for gay men. We've got to get it in pharmacies. We've got to get it in GP surgeries, particularly for women, of colour, and as well as for people who live in rural areas. The hot gay farmers need their PrEP too. And and if you're expected to drive hundreds of miles to a sexual health clinic, is not good for them. But we need it in more places. It's got to be super accessible.
Yeah, and my second question is for Harry. Harry's name, yes. So there was a, in the first half, something was brought up, and I was like, I wanted to just go into more detail, if you're comfortable, and it doesn't spoil your book, because I've just realized this is probably part of it. It's about trans men going into gay male areas, because obviously, like, not obviously.
That is literally his book.
I know, literally. As soon as I had this
Please
question,
rip off your own IP on this podcast.
I don't know, I was just very interested. It's like, if you don't mind sharing a little bit about their experience, because I kind of find that experience very intimidating, so I can only imagine what it'd be like for trans men to go into that situation.
Yeah, I think, and the book, of course, speaks to lots of this, and it started for me, like, coming out and realising that I was gay, and then going on to Grindr and going into gay bars, and then eventually, you know, like, saunas and sex on premises spaces as well. And yeah, of course, it's really intimidating, but I think affirming in equal measure, and not all experiences will be the same. Like, every time I go into a gay bar, if I know that it's really, you know, trans inclusive, I'll be a little bit more comfortable. But that doesn't mean that every time I go there, there'll be the same people in the room. And so it's always going to be like that. I think there's kind of a sense that I'm always slightly on guard. And there's a piece in the book, especially about this idea of coming out on the dance floor, which, you know, if I'm having a dance with someone and then they're kind of like, oh, you know, do you want to go back? It's like, well, when is the appropriate time for me to tell them that I'm trans? Is it before we start kissing? Is it like mid makeout? Is it when they're on the way back to mine? Is it just before we have sex? Like, what, this idea of we're in a space that is designed so we don't have to come out, and yet we do. So there's an additional layer to that as well. And there's all kinds of complexities and nuances and different experiences. But I think there are additional layers that are really interesting to explore as well. Buy the book.
They're all sold out. There's no more copies left here.
Oh, it's out on Thursday.
I love that.
Available in all good bookstores, yes. And a number of disreputable ones as well, I imagine.
I hope so.
I did, obviously in the book, and obviously we'll just mention this very quickly, I did really laugh the situation where you met that lovely guy in the RVT, and then you're in the cab and you turn to look at him and he's just fallen asleep in the back of the taxi.
It happens so much. Yeah.
I'm just
yeah.
like, oh, this is like your night. And then you turn around and he's just like snoring kind of thing.
Yeah. And, you know, with that experience, it was like my first gay boy night out at the Royal Vauxhall Tavern. And I was kind of debating in my head about when the best time to come out is. And I was getting really panicked and I was like, oh my God, I don't know. And then he was like, oh yeah, I know already. I follow you on Twitter. So I kind of, I think... It kind of speaks to this experience of like contemporary gay culture, which I think is really funny as well. So,
brilliant. Any more questions? Come on, there must be one.
Don't be shy.
No more? Okay, well, thank you all so much for your contributions this evening. It's been absolutely amazing.
Can I ask one really quickly to the other panel members? If you could go back and meet your younger queer self and tell them about the sex you're going to have and give them some advice, what would that be?
Wow. I think I would say stop trying to force it if it doesn't feel right. And I think come out sooner and try and find some queer elders, which is really hard in Essex. Thank God I live here. So I think I'd say, yeah, come out sooner. And if it doesn't feel right, don't do it. Don't force yourself.
I could say that because I've been having sex since I was very young, to not been like hooking up with older men or people that can use, you know, if you are like 14 or 15 and you are and someone is 20 or more, you are under a risk, you know, and that people are abusing of the age, because even though you are immature, even you say, yes, I want to do it, you are immature. You are not enough mature to just... If you have a boyfriend or a girlfriend or whatever, yes, that's fine, but not hooking up on Grindr, because there is a lot of young people that are using the apps, even though if they are underage, they are using the apps and it's dangerous. So I think it's something that should be talked about. You know, the minors on the Grindr and all of the hooking up apps. That's really, and the older ones. For that reason, I'm banned from Grindr. But
don't.
Well, basically, I'm banned from Grindr because I was really bored and I was like, well, I want to do some social service. And I put on my profile that I was 16 and I was speaking with a male. He sent me a couple of dick pics and yeah, basically the other one I said I was going to the police and he said, well, tell me what they said. But and then they banned my account. But yes, they're better.
So don't falsify your age on Grindr because you will get banned. This will happen, but no, I think you know you're right. It's there's the responsibility. It's like, you know, do things at the age you're comfortable to do things. I think we feel a lot of pressure when we're younger and expectations to live up to, or you know, to answer your question, I think I would be, and something I'm still trying to do generally in life is be less in my head. Be more kind of in the moment, enjoy the experience, because I think I'm an overthinker. So sometimes he's laughing, but I am. And so sometimes that can get in the way of real intimacy and really enjoying the moment, not just sex, any moment in life. So I think for me, it's about kind of just trying to be more present and just really enjoy the experience and let go of expectations of what something should be. You know, I kind of believed when I was younger that sex was a certain way. And if you didn't have sex in a certain way, i.e. like you mentioned earlier, everyone should have anal sex, or everyone should be, you know, intimacy is so many different levels and you can get experiences and pleasure from different things. So do you, I think go with what you feel. That would be my thing, definitely.
Yeah, I would say probably two things. The first thing is that, you know, anything is possible. I think when I was younger, when I came out as trans, the first worry was, well, who's going to love you? Who's going to want to possibly be with you if you're like this? And that would kind of was strange to me because I never really felt like I was going to be an unlovable person. So I think the first thing is that you know, you can be anything and whatever that you want to do. But the second thing I would probably say to myself is find the clitoris sooner because it feels really fucking good. That's what I would say.
Amazing. I love that. Amazing. So we don't have any more questions, are we sure?
What about you, Richard? What would you say to yourself?
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Essentially, don't aspire for a heteronormative gay experience. And I think as a younger person, I really hope that essentially I could do all the things that straight people do and just be gay about doing it. And then I realised that was shit. The best thing about being gay is you get to write your own rules. Yeah. As long as it's consensual, like, you get to try new things, do different things and explore different things. And that releasing yourself of that burden that there's an expected way to be in a relationship, not least when you see so many bad ones about, they're just like, no, we're going to try it our way and do it our way. And just be really open to having that conversation about what you might want or expect and what your partner might want to expect and where that might go together, and that relationships are a journey, not a status.
Absolutely. And I think trying new things, like we mentioned saunas, we mentioned hookups, cruising, whatever. If you want to do something, it's liberating. Do it. And as long as you're having fun and you're not in danger, have fun. Yeah, I think that's really important. Thank you all so, so much.
Thank you.
Can everyone give my guests a massive round of applause?
Buy Harry's book and book Billy's show.
Harry's book, I believe, is sold out here now, but where can they find it, Harry?
I was ready to have the rest of my gin. So it's out on Thursday, A Trans Man Walks Into a Gay Bar. You can find it online, but please do try and support indie bookshops as much as possible. Kemptown Books will probably have it in again, and if you're not from Brighton, then Queer Lit and Gaze the Word and wherever.
And also I think the Feminist Bookshop in Brighton as great. Well probably will have copies, which is independent bookshop, so they're really great. And go and see Billy's show this weekend.
It's out on Friday. There's I believe a few tickets left for the Friday and Saturday, but the Sunday there's tickets left, so come along, see the show, it should be fun.
Amazing. So big round of applause for Billy Gold, Richard Angel, Harry Nicholas and Yarel Benitez Borrego.
And can we get an applause for the amazing star in here? Woo!
Thank you. Thank you all so much for coming. I really appreciate it.
I really hope you enjoyed the show. A big thank you once again to all my guests. Please share the podcast, give it a 5-star review if you'd like, and leave any comments you may have. You can also follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok for all the latest updates on Queer I Am the podcast. Also, check out my website, www.fluiactually.com. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.